Hello, my name is Jason Reichel, and you're listening to Risk Management Brick by Brick. I'm fascinated with people who are helping build and maintain the physical world around us. On each episode of this podcast, we'll dive in with a risk manager, speak to them about how technology plays a role in this process.
Thank you for joining me, Risk by Risk. Daniel, how are you today?
Good, how are you?
Good. One thing that I've noticed about people coming onto the podcast that I want to take a crack at is, how much of a risk taker would you say you are in your personal and professional life? Like, do you think there's a profile for a risk manager, or do you think that it's a wide variety? Let's open up the therapy can and get right down into analyzing you.
I think it comes with experience. My younger days, especially being from a construction field background, I think I definitely did take risks. But even then, you would think that was pretty crazy. Just speaking from experience, I've had numerous near miss incidents.
What's the riskiest thing you've ever done on a job site? Just so that, you know, all the construction project managers on here can be like, see, we knew he was dangerous at one point.
I mean, I almost flipped a forklift one time. It did tip over, but it came right back up. So
you say your background's in construction, right? How did you end up from construction site to where you are now?
I think with certifications really promoted me quickly. I made a pivot from, you know, operations foreman, superintendent, seeking from a demolition side. I got certified as a construction health and safety technician because I was looking for a change. There was a job opportunity that didn't pan out, but I did come to the company I'm currently am now, who I had worked for previously, and they had an opportunity for a safety supervisor right away. So that really helped me out, having that certification previously. And then just, you know, my knowledge of being in construction and running a crew. And if you're working construction, if you have the can-do attitude, but also just staying busy, looking for opportunities to be better, you know, it really helped me accelerate pretty quickly. And I kept furthering. I went back to school, finished my degree, and which helped me pursue other certifications that required a degree, like your certified safety professional. So that really helped me a lot along the way.
Where does the passion lie? Does it lie in construction? That's really a driver. Does it lie in risk mitigation, safety? Where's the passion lie?
Growing up, I didn't see myself in this.
No one ever answers that question. Yes, I imagine this would be.
Like I said, I got into safety by accident. There was a good paying job that was an opportunity. So I was like, all right, I'm going to go for it, right? And I kind of just ran with it. I had children at a very young age, so I needed a really good job. So dad's like, hey, I got a job for you in the demolition company I work for. So that started my course in this journey to where I'm at right now.
One of the things, because of your background in safety and risk, I kind of want to try to blend the two and ask you some questions about it. Get a lot of questions about the difference between safety and risk in construction. Can you outline some of the hazards to health and safety in construction as it relates to how companies and builders may contribute to their own issues? Like, what are some of the red flags that come up that you think about?
Just not having dedicated resources for the people who are at risk to utilize. Let's say you tell your guys, I need you to work safe every day, but you don't have any processes in place like regular safety meetings, regular pre-task planning, making sure those are deliverables. Like, so they're not just getting pencil whipped, but they're also either getting turned in or they're getting checked on. You have to have procedures in place so that the work in the field understands that, you know, we have to do things a certain way. And then also from the top down, looking down, you can kind of monitor and see what's going on out there and have a really finger on the pulse, know what kind of work you're doing. I mean, that's just the start of it, really.
Well, one thing I want to ask you about that, which is there seems to be a couple of different ways to build safety plans, right? To deploy in construction. When I talk to project managers who don't like people in safety, it typically comes down to a lot of bureaucracy, a lot of checking, a lot of slowing down the work. Obviously, they want to meet their timetables. And when I talk to them about what a good person looks like, it looks like they both defend against higher up processes that slow down the work and bubble up actual safety related things from the ground up that's happened on the accounts. How do you walk the balance when you're in this role, when you're doing safety or risk management? I think both kind of have to deal with this factor between your executive mandates and the very real day-to-day job need of people on the ground.
I think that kind of lies on the safety professional that's employed. You can go about it how you want to, and how you're received is going to be about what you put into it, right? So I think one of the first things you need to understand is as a safety professional, you need to be helpful. You need to be helping the teams in the field, and you need to be helping the teams in the office, and you got to help them facilitate that interaction, that communication. I think getting back to what you said, like you're slowing things down and stuff of that nature, is you have some safety professionals who maybe have come from school and they don't know the work. I've seen it quite a bit where the safety manager will walk in and see an operation going on, and because he doesn't understand it, he says, whoa, time out, what's going on here? You guys got to walk me through this. Whereas that team in the field has done this countless times. They've done it without injury. And, you know, that's the flip side is, you know, they haven't documented, like, this is our formal work processes. This is how we train our guys to do this operation. So it could be a flip, both sides of the coin. I think the other thing that's important is that as a safety professional, you have to be, the way you present yourself in the field is, you know, I'm here to help you guys. You know, I'm not here to get people in trouble. You know, we have that reputation of writing people up to somebody that isn't trustworthy. So you have to quell that right off the bat and just shows like, hey, I'm just a person here just like you. And I'm actually here to make sure that anything that you want to voice as a concern with how things are going, that I can communicate that upwards as well. And then even on the other side with, you know, working with management, you got to carry the torch for the people down below, making sure things are getting communicated and making sure you're a voice for change if necessary. And then, you know, from the top down, it's you help implement new things, new ideas, and see that they get executed.
So when we talk about the difference between safety and risk, where are those lines for you? Where's risk management begin and safety work ends? Or are they one and the same, or are they part of the same department? How does that structure work in your mind?
I think, you know, the safety comes down to frontline, what's happening, who's at risk for injury. In terms of risk, you know, there's all kinds of risk when it comes to a construction company. You know, there's risk to the project, whether that be financial, operational, what have you, contractual. There's risk with, you know, working with certain companies that may not have a good reputation, but they got a good number. So you're trying to facilitate that and making sure that they understand what the expectations are. I think the safety is, you know, the immediate contact with the operations going on, and the risk is the overarching, you know, what could happen. And even beyond just safety, right? Some things that I've learned since I've taken over this role in the last few years.
Well, you mentioned something that has always interested me about a lot more of this kind of stuff, risk, safety, are getting into the contracting process, are getting into negotiation, pre-qual, all of these other elements. You know, it used to be that risk was something that happened after everything was signed and people were going into the job. And now it seems like it's being pulled forward into the business processes. Is that true with your experience as well?
Yes, we have pre-quals even for our clients now. You know, they want to see what your safety record is, your documentation. And it's pretty expansive now with in terms of what they're looking for.
That help you be competitive and win deals because you guys have a good reputation, because you've addressed all these issues. And then how do you get those things down to your subcontractors? Because that's also, if you, you know, you're in the middle, sometimes your safety record is not impacted by those that you employ, like in the mention of someone without a good reputation, but good number. What safety clauses do you guys consider for yourself around contract negotiation? This is a topic that keeps getting brought up and people are asking me constantly.
Well, we do
have, what shouldn't we have in our negotiations and contracts?
We have a project safety program that we just reference as you need to abide by this and you agree to follow it. So instead of having all this huge written out contracts for safety, it's here's our document. Make sure you review it and make sure you agree to it.
Do you do any audits of your subcontractors, or you mitigate, but how do you also make sure that they're doing a good job?
So, I mean, I'm on the pre-qual team for us. So I help pre-qualify all of our subcontractors that we use. Our programs that we use, you know, you're looking at their safety record for the last 3 years. You're looking up the OSHA establishment website, seeing if they have any fines or any recent inspections or fatalities, things of that nature. And we ask them all these things. So you also get to see if they're lying or not. You know, we ask that they submit a lot of their safety deliverables that I talked to you about. So it helps you kind of understand what their safety culture is. Like, submit to me a recent safety meeting, submit to me a recent pre-task plan, submit to me.
How much of the job are your direct workers versus subcontractors that you work with? And has that fluxed over time? Are you working more with subcontractors now or in the past?
I would say 95% of our work is subcontracted. You know, our guys are really for temp protection, cleaning, any scope gap stuff. You know, we work with a lot of subcontractors. A big part of our business is being able to manage them. The biggest thing is, you know, what's made us successful for so long is just building those relationships with, you know, really like-minded subcontractors like us who take safety very seriously. It's valued, you know, it's part of how you do business. And it's been very successful for us in the long, since I've been here.
What's the value to you of contractual risk transfer as it relates to your subcontractors? Then is that something that is like dotting an I, or is it something that you use as a mechanism for understanding if they did like are adhering to everything in the contracts? How's that process fit in for you?
That was in place before I even got here. So we have a really strong risk management broker who had implemented that stuff long before I've gotten here. I've never really had to take a deep dive into that and make sure that's all clear. But, you know, it's a big part of how we operate.
Do you guys require actually reviewing the policy of your subcontractors or just COIs?
Mostly COIs that cover it. And then,
is that part
of
the pre-qual process for you? I mean, I know a lot of people are pulling pre-qual policy information in when they're pre-qualing subs now.
We do require COIs in our pre-qual process, but, you know, for all of our clients, their COI requirements can be different across the board. So that's where it really takes a look. That's where our admin team really takes a look at that. I mean, that's where we really handle that stage of the COI process and making sure all that's clearly lined out. But yeah. It's just so different across your clients.
Do you have like bands of risk that you apply to individuals or to subcontractors? Or do you guys have project by project specific requirements because they're being dictated by essentially the builders themselves, the owners?
Yeah, it's typically project by project because it's dictated by the owners.
How many projects do you guys typically have going on?
Right now, I think we have over 35 projects running.
Yeah, that's a lot of projects in flight. How do you stay on top of all of those? What's your process for organization? Like, are you living in spreadsheet land? Do you have to use a system? Like, how are you organizing all that information?
No, we have a system, you know, at least for since I've been here. Our admin team pretty much manages, you know, all of the COI process. So, you know, our pre-qual process, we have a pre-qual team for that. We use another program for that. Everything, we've gotten pretty good in the last 5 years of, you know, using technology and not trying to manage things on spreadsheets.
Everybody's going through that spreadsheet transformation, right? Moving to a technology landscape. Yeah. How has that changed since you've been in the industry, since you've been in the industry for a while? Have you seen technology be taken seriously? I mean, it's kind of always been taken seriously on the construction site. You get everything on a construction site is technology. But in operations, it seems like you've seen an influx of technology solutions.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's quite a different few programs that I've seen since I've been here. I mean, our pre-qual has changed. We stay with the same provider, but they've changed their platform. More and more of their they're realizing, they're taking feedback from their clients. What can we change? What can we do better? We're pretty vocal about that too. You know, what, you know, we'd like to see, you know, working with our vendors.
Are you guys using any AI or predictive stuff right now? Like, has there been talk, like what's the stance of the organization and you particularly on using AI as a form of this?
No, we haven't yet, but I know it's interested me. Like, I've been looking up a lot of different programs lately. You know, a lot of that, you know, revolves, at least for safety, revolves around cameras and monitoring images and stuff like that. But we haven't, to my knowledge, are utilizing any AI, but it's definitely something that I'm going to keep a watch on for sure. Yeah. And what could be helpful for us in the near future. Because like I said, that's a good part of, you know, what I do here at this company is that it allows me to essentially, is there any new idea that it may affect the company that we should be on top of?
Yeah.
So that's the other way I look at risk is like, what's the risk of doing something or not doing something?
Without taking some risk, there would be no work for anyone to do. Like, you have to eventually take some risk. So it's just about putting yourself in that correct frame of mind so that you can be as successful as possible. You know, one thing that I want to ask about particular skills and qualities in construction, what are the skills and qualities to be a good leader? Like, in your opinion, you can go from people you've seen on the site to risk management, whatever you kind of comes to mind when I talk about what does it take to be a good leader in construction?
Be honest. You have to have high integrity. I think it helps to be a good communicator. I think you want to make sure that you're easy to talk to when people need to come talk to you. I think one of the things is lead by example. I've seen so many times in this industry, especially when I was a young foreman, do as I say, not as I do. So
right, know, all the safety protocols are for people who haven't been doing it for X amount of time or whatever.
Exactly. I think the other thing is just to be a good coach. you have to have a coaching mindset and being willing to develop other people. You know, that's something that I learned really early on, is because not only did it help them and keep them engaged, and but it also helped me out a lot. I would never want to be the person who just stacks work upon work upon work upon themselves. You know, I like to delegate. And I think that's a great way to make sure that people are engaged because they're learning something. You know, like people don't want to do the same thing every day. Where's their development if they're not learning? When I started a job, I always tried to like, how can I do my boss's job as quick as I can?
That's that lifelong learning sort of mindset of like, I'm going to be always pushing myself forward, engaging. And a good leader looks for those opportunities for their team in any department, right? And pretty much any industry. But I think in a knowledge-based industry like construction, it can go a long way to be willing to step in and learn something outside of your current skill set.
I think you just have to have be able to, at least when it comes to the field, you know, one position that really is kind of daunting to me and how they can do it successfully is like, you know, a superintendent. You know, they have, and especially they're saying, and I've heard, but a lot of the upcoming superintendents just don't have the experience, right, that a lot of these older superintendents have. You know, they might never get it, because before that position was filled by a carpenter, you know, who had worked his way for 15 years in the field and then became a superintendent. They taught him the intricacies of putting a schedule together, putting an email together, but being a builder, that skill that you cannot essentially teach, it's just a lot longer process if you've never done it, right?
Yeah, it's an experience through doing, right? That leads to those things. Yeah, I often wonder about that. And I wonder if what's going to end up being is a deeper partnership between operations of those things and having experienced people on your team to validate information, right? That we have to come up with a solution for it. In this case, I don't think it's AI or some piece of technology. I think we have a tremendous pressure on all of us in these, what I call the built world industries, like construction, like even property management, like trucking, where it's knowledge-based gap that used to sit with one person is now being distributed to multiple individuals. And how do we keep up the quality and safety while also realizing that the profile of people have changed, which I think is really interesting. It also means that, you know, these people might be doing this job for 60 years. You know, if someone's like 30, 40, they might be doing it for another 30 or 40 years. So I think people are also getting these opportunities much younger than they were in the past as the baby boomers retire. Let's do risky or not too risky. Are you ready for this?
Shoot.
You're tempted to climb onto the roof of your house to retrieve a lost item without any safety gear. Risky or too risky?
It's risky.
Do you have a flat house or do you have a peaked house? When does it become too risky? Like what's the scenario for you?
I mean, you got to have some common sense, and it's, you know, what's the pitch of my roof? And I mean, if you're at a very almost flat or flat roof, I mean, I think it's more so getting up onto the roof is making sure you have the right ladder, making sure that that ladder extends 3 feet past your landing. But a lot of people don't understand. I mean, most people are going to fall because their ladder setup's pretty poor.
Yeah, I think
they're going to fall getting on or off.
That's a personal question, because I had to get on my roof to remove a palm tree frond in San Francisco. And my ladder, I was stretching. It was not even all the way on. Like I had to do a power lift to get to my roof. It was terrible. You're thinking of swimming in a lake without checking if there's any warning signs for dangerous currents. Is that risky or too risky?
It's risky. I mean, I'm known to be like stripping my clothes off, running to the lake and jumping in.
All right. Like to go on a hiking trail without telling anyone your plans or estimated return time. Risky or too risky?
That's too risky.
There's nature out there, man.
I think that just goes without saying, like if you go do something and nobody knows where you're at or how to reach you, that's pretty risky. Especially in a place like that where you might not have cell reception.
What about your kids? Would they do that, or do they were they raised understanding that's too risky?
To go on a hiking trail without telling anybody? Yeah. Oh, they wouldn't do that. Too risky. I just like seeing them playing outside. So, I mean, that's great.
Yeah, right.
Getting kids off their phones. My kids
are not going on a hike. We don't have to worry about that.
They definitely would be like, are you coming?
Before we go, do you have any final thoughts or advice for our listeners regarding navigating risk in life and decision-making? Any piece of advice that you think is important that you would give to someone entering the industry or someone already thinking about making the jump, say from being a construction worker to actually working in operations? Like what are some of the best advice you've ever been given?
Be observant. Try to listen as much as you can. Try to look between the lines about, you know, where are there problems or unforeseen problems? And then, you know, when you're comfortable and you've, you know, learned something and you can, you know, impart something, say something. I think a lot of people just get nervous about having a good idea and putting it out there, right? Especially the further up you get into this world of you're either a director or you're a senior superintendent, project manager, whatever. I'm just not comfortable with the status quo. I'm always looking to what can I do to improve my value, but also improve the life for everybody around me, whether that be, you know, making safer programs or improving the business, because in all at all, it's going to help everyone.
I think that goes to your good leader, right? What it takes to be a good leader. And I think you wonderfully outlined that. Daniel, it was really great talking to you. I really appreciate someone who's sort of done some of every role within their organization and has taken an approach to de-risking and working with their team and subcontractors so directly. So I appreciate the conversation. It was really great having you.
You too. Take care.
Risk Management Brick by Brick is brought to you by TrustLayer. Find out how TrustLayer manages risk so that the people can build the physical world around us. Head over to trustlayer.io. And then make sure to subscribe to Risk Management Brick by Brick on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. On behalf of the TrustLayer team, thank you for listening.